You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guests are Dr. Sasha Alex Lesson and his wife, Janet Kira Lesson. Sasha Lesson has a PhD and an MA in anthropology and a master's in counseling psychology. He is a facilitator of holotropic breathwork, the paranormal, possession, near-death experiences, entheogenic journey work, hypnotherapeutic past life regression, spirit release, existential analysis, spiritual emergence, and gestalt therapy. I hope I said all of that correctly. He has authored Anunnaki, Gods No More, Legacy of the Gods, Anunnaki False Gods, and Great Relationships, and was asked by Zechariah Sitchin to make the information on the ancient Anunnaki of Sumer available to the general public. He is co-host to an internet radio show on both Revolution Radio and Aquarian Radio. Janet Kira Lesson is the ultimate radio personality, whistleblower, and interviewer, writes about alien, contactee reintegration, cult deprogramming, paranormal, past life, walk-in, near-death, interdimensional, multidimensional, astronomical, genetic, shamanic, tantric, polyamorous, and ancient anthropological phenomenon. She has integrated these fields of study and experience in a highly readable series, Dance of the Souls, and has already published the first book of the series, Pierce the Veil. In Pierce the Veil, Janet brings together all her fields of interest and shares her own direct, upfront, and personal experiences with the Anunnaki, Greys, the military working with the ETs, as well as her adventures at the base the ETs and our clandestine military hide under, Johnson Atoll in the Pacific. Janet regularly downloads messages from Ninma, the Anunnaki Mother of Humanity. Janet's book, Anunnaki, Legacy of the Gods, includes many of Ninma's messages from humanity, messages of how to transcend the matrix of hatred that ensnares us, and how to create a civilized society that can gain admission to galactic society. Janet also co-hosts internet radio programs on Revolution Radio and Aquarian Radio. So, between them, they have over 15 websites, and they are all listed here on their show bio, so do check them out. This information is permanently available in our archives, so I'm not going to list each one individually. Let's just welcome our guests to the show now, and find out some of the interesting information that they have to share tonight. So hi, Sasha and Janet. How are you?
Hi. Aloha, as we say in Hawaii.
Oh, yes. I wish I was there with you now.
Yes. Well, it's been rainy and cold, so I don't know. It might be warmer where you are.
Well, it is. It is. You know, the chemtrails keep it nice and sizzly, so I, you know. what else is new?
Yes.
What stood out right away when I was reading this from your bio was Janet, your experiences with the Anunnaki, Greys, and the military working with ETs at our clandestine military base under Johnson Atoll in the Pacific. And
yeah.
I have never heard of that. So, and I dig a lot about this stuff because I dig it.
Well, Dr. Michael Sala wrote an article in 2009 after Obama took the presidency, and he said that there was a meeting with the extraterrestrials, just like we had with Eisenhower in the 50s.
Mm.
So. You can Google that, Dr. Michael Sala, and it was one of the little tiny islands. Johnson Atoll is a series of very tiny islands, and they're not very big at all. So it's one of the tiny islands in the atoll. And when I read that, I went, oh my goodness, so he knows something. I don't think he knows the whole story. I only know my part because I am an experiencer, and I was taken to the underground installation in December of 2000 and, what was it? I met Sasha. When did we meet, honey? 1997. So that was the December of 96. But say something, Sasha. We haven't heard your voice yet.
Something, Sasha.
Well, I'm also very curious about, from Sasha, too, about Sitchin's works and what the status of the Anunnaki is today, because so many people are talking about, you know, their return and what's going to happen, and that they're here already, that there are sub-breeds that have been bred off their line, and some of them are extremely negative, and, you know, it goes on and on and on and on. So it would be really helpful to get the skinny from somebody who's really knows what they're talking about. So that's another question that I think we should have come up tonight.
Okay. Do you want to continue with Janet's story so it makes some kind of sense? She's telling you about the base and how she got there and what she encountered, and then I'll talk after a bit.
Yes. Let's finish with Janet.
Okay, but it's kind of like cutting to the chase. But all right, so basically I had an experience where I was working at the Johnson Atoll installation from December of 95 till February of 97. And when I was there, I was taken out of my bed about a year into my contract. I was civilian working for the military. I've never been in the military, but civilian working for the military. And about a year into my contract, I was taken out of my bed. The traditional, you know, abductee scenario, I was being carried by six grays. These are the four-fingered, you know, three fingers and opposing thumb grays, not the five-finger grays. And they were about 4 feet tall, and there were six of them. They were carrying me like a surfboard, and I was screaming, of course, you know, being taken from my bed, and my natural impulse was to scream, and I was screaming very loud. And I said, as I was screaming, I said telepathically, why isn't anybody rescuing me? Because I'm screaming so loud that everybody in this island must be able to hear me. The island was only a half mile wide by 3 miles long.
Was it just ETs, Janet?
These were six military accompanied six grays, okay? So it was a MIB, they call it Men in Black, My Labs abduction. So this was a My Labs abduction, joint U.S. military and extraterrestrial abduction. So the gray that was carrying my right foot replied to my inquiry and said, go ahead and scream all you want. Nobody can hear you. You're in an energy field. Now, at that time, I had a young lover that was about 20 years younger than me, and they had taken him from his bed at the same time.
How did he talk to you? You said he told you. Tell me about that. How did he communicate with you?
Telepathically.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, okay.
Wow.
So he's going to make sure I don't forget any parts of the story.
Well, this is great. Keep going.
Yeah. All right, I don't want to take too long with it, but basically I'll make it short. They took both of us in a little kind of like a beam ship, you know, like billion-dollar beam ship, small shuttlecraft, and we went out into the water and went underwater to an underwater installation. The upper level was a traditional, you know, kind of human construct with that metal table that you always see that the experiencers are put upon. And they took my young boyfriend and they put him on the table, and they were examining him, and there were three different types of grays. There were very, very tall grays that seemed to be the supervisor, and the shorter ones that carried me, and then even smaller ones that were about 3 feet tall. And they were just all around him, and he was fussing for a while there, and suddenly they somehow make you go still, so he quieted down. And then while I was sitting on this chair just watching about 7-8 feet away, I was instructed just totally telepathically to go over to a dressing area, and I was, there was a gown waiting for me, and I put the gown on, and it was form-fitting, just like it had been custom-made for me. It was perfect length, and it had the whole bodice was full of gems that were in the material. They weren't sewn. They were actually kind of melded into the material, and they were shoes that made the shoes in the Wizard of Oz looks like they were, they were just absolutely fabulous shoes. But they had a function. I realized after looking at this scene over and over again, they had a function. So I was instructed to start walking, and I, every step I took, it was like gliding 20 steps. So the shoes somehow helped me propel faster and walk this corridor. And I had to walk because as I was walking, these very tall Anunnaki, one by one, came out from the side walls. The wall would slide across as I walked by and join us. And they were all dressed in beautiful costumes that were kind of out of, period costumes, like out of Henry the Eighth or some other ancient court. I'm not sure exactly what time frame they were. And they were absolutely gorgeous beings. Each one was more beautiful, male or female, than the one before. And they gradually getting taller and taller, and we eventually all walked to a natural configuration, which was a large hall made out of natural rock, and there was a I keep forgetting the name of the material, obsidian wall. It was that total black, glossy, shiny rock, and I was standing before it, and there was a beam in the center of the floor, and it was in a circle. It was bright white light, and everybody was saying, if we were walking down, is this it? Is this the day? Is she the one? Is she the key? And, there were 1,000 beings. I asked at one point, how many beings are here? They said 1,000, and they were all at one point talking at once, all telepathically. It was quite a noise. And then they quieted down, and I stepped into the circle, and the wall disappeared before me, and there was a large four legs of a dragon, and she saw that we were trying to see her, which we couldn't because it was a larger cavern inside that we only could see the entryway. So she projected an avatar of herself that was the same size that I was, and then we were looking each other in the eyes at the same height, and then we started to communicate at an even more rapid level because everybody was asking questions all at once, and it was like a beehive, a buzz. It was such high communication, but all this information was exchanged between, and I was the go-between, so it was like the conduit for all this information. And then after that, they returned me with the grays. The grays are the little delivery systems accompanied by the military, and they plopped me back in my bed, and they plopped my boyfriend back in his bed. And then when I met Dr. Lisson, I finally was able to tell somebody. I was never able to tell anybody all those years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, what was the, you must have figured out what the substance of that meeting was for.
Well, it's basically about these times right now and what's about to unfold. And I don't have every nuance of the conversation. And I know that I will know what I need to know when the time is right. Mm. But whenever we have these conversations, like the one we had last night and the one today, more and more information keeps coming to the front. And I know that was a major download that I got. Mm. But they don't overload people or reveal information until it's the appropriate time. But I know it's about what we're doing here now today and the times that we are approaching, which we can go into when we go back and get a little bit more about the Anunnaki, because this is all connected.
Right. Well, Sasha, would you like to give us some backstory on the Anunnaki then?
Sure, I'd love to. When I was a kid, I was really struck by the story of Noah, and I just couldn't figure out how they got all those animals that were within 6 miles of his boat on it, and it just didn't make any sense for me. And lo and behold, I became a cultural anthropologist, and I wound up studying from a guy named Zachariah Sitchin, who talked about that story comes from a much, much older one, from ancient Sumer. Was recorded like, you know, after Noah's flood, and the Sumerians wrote, and my teacher translated this stuff, the gods, which were just big people like us, and we are essentially them, big, long-lived people like us, came and dictated that they came in their rocket ships to get gold, which they wanted to float up into the atmosphere to save their planet, which was losing its ionosphere, and they were trying to get monoatomic gold. And one of their kings came, that's how they came here for gold. And then what happened after they came here is they decided, they found the gold in Africa. Their geneticist deliberately made a mine mutiny so that the miners, who thought they were big heroes and wound up working under the ground for gold all the time, mutinied. And he said, look, I know just what to do. I'll adapt our genome to this planet, the Earth. I'll use some of the genes from Erectus, the ancestor of Bigfoot, and so that they'll be adapted and healthy. We won't let them live as long as us or anything like that, but they'll work for us. And there was a lot of objection, but he got to do this, and so that's basically how we got made. But he was a real clever guy. He used the DNA from the nurses that came from Nibiru, the mitochondrial DNA, added copper, added clay, and basically his son, a guy named Mingashita, figured out how to make us reproductive. And what they got, this is 300,000 years ago, was just mind-blowing, because they realized, oh my gosh, this creature is just as smart as we are, and she seemed to have a compassion. That's what we got from and from Homo erectus, some kind of greater level of compassion. And Enki was designing us so we'd have higher spiritual potential in this civilization he came from on Nibiru that almost wiped itself out from nuclear wars. They had a dictatorship and they put women down, and it was junk in a lot of ways. And so by the time the flood came, the commander said, just let all the earthlings drown. Heck with them. But the geneticist wound up saving a lot of us. He took all kinds of starts and buried them in diorite in Iraq. That's where this place was. Bosses all went around the planet while most of the people drowned, except for the people that were warned, and the hybrids that they had been breeding went to high ground. But when they came back, that's when they decided they're going to foster us. They're going to rule through the descendants of Noah, who was the son of the geneticist anyway. And they're going to live as gods. And they enforced their will. They got us involved in all kinds of wars, even nuclear war. And they gave us the civilization. They gave us life, and they gave us the civilization that we have. They gave us debt, and they gave us war, and they gave us hierarchy, and they gave us violence, but they gave us buildings and architecture and mathematics and an energy system with their pyramids, where they could generate electricity using the geomagnetic force of Earth. They had anti-gravity machines and craft, and they had a transshipment base on Mars. High civilization, and most of them left after they bombed out Sodom and Gomorrah and the spaceport in Sinai. And then the nuclear fallout blew all over Iraq and Iran and so forth, except for Babylon. So they just left Earth mainly for a while to the guy that was running Babylon, who was a prince from Nibiru, who was trying to get the humans to reinvade Nibiru so they could take that over. His name was Marduk. But in any case, these guys warred with each other, and they bombed. Nuclear bombs off the Indus Valley too, and most of them left from Lake Titicaca area, Tiwanaku, and they had a big landing takeoff place at Nazca. Most of them went back, but some of them stayed and kept running affairs here on Earth. The commander wound up being Yahweh, and it basically associated with the Roman Empire, and it goes on and on. So to this day,
the Anunnaki who never left, the Anunnaki who are the breeds, and us, because we are the Anunnaki and we have the same murderous capacity and greedy capacity and problems that they have too, because they're people just like us, except they programmed us to do better than them. That's sort of the summary.
Really? Well, interesting. So basically what we're seeing today on the planet is warring factions that have descended from the Anunnaki that are probably vying for a domination and control of the planet.
Well, I think that what's happened is the king of Nibiru, Anu, has in several times, has visited in 60 BCE and other times, has again and again said, the creator of all has interfered for several times and made sure that we get the message that our job is to foster, to protect, and support and encourage these creatures. They're an illegal race. We created them. But Galzu was sent by the Federation so that we wouldn't leave the planet. And we have been repeatedly told, and well, my son, the commander, you fall in line to, yes, sir, I will. Your job is specifically, Nima, my daughter, you, Enki, of course, that's your job, and Ningishita, you brilliant, brilliant person, Quetzalcoatl, you're going to go back on December 21st, 2012, and bring a bunch of nine gods and 12 gods, as they call us, down to help you. I want to see these creatures fostered. We created them, and is everybody in agreement? Yes, sire, your will is our will.
Well, what has gone wrong then? It doesn't appear that they are actually following that their instructions.
I Janet will probably have a different reply than I do, but I think that I can feel the wave of perturbation that's going to change the whole system that has come down since that day. It's like a bigger and bigger wave of consciousness, and it takes a certain percentage of the population to listen to shows like yours and realize we are the wave of oneness and love and peace on this planet, and we are stopping to participate in the wars and in the debt system that has oppressed us so long, and we got help, lots of it. Janet will tell you more.
Oh, I agree with what you're saying, honey. I know it looks like it looks different and it feels bad, but you know, the faction that is has been under control for many, many, you know, thousands of years is fighting to the last breath, and they've already lost. That's what the dragon said to me, basically, is, you know, there's a point where just the changing of the guard and things will shift, and you symbol it as a perturbation. It's a perverse reality. It's too perverse. It's unsustainable. The reason why we're incarnated is for evolution and growth, and we are starting to devolve, rather evolve.
Right.
So I, you know, align with the people that are saying the guard is shifting, and if you go back to the Anunnaki story, they look to the heavens to see when the ages would change, and we are in the new age of Aquarius, which is Enki's era, and it's about to begin. So I say bring it on, and I'm, you know, waiting patiently and looking in the skies for the signs and looking at how people are, they are changing for the positive. We have more and more of these shows that are talking about it.
Yeah, but it's not just, it's every one of us, Lance. Just if you really look inside, can you feel this is the best of times and the worst of times and the greatest of challenges that brings out the very best in you?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I was just thinking about that today, and, I can validate that. And, ultimately we have to look to ourselves and go within to make the changes that we want, because they're not outside of ourselves in the projection, but we have to do the inner work, which is really what we're being forced to do. We're being forced to look at our own shadows and bring up what we are not looking at or hiding from ourselves. And
Absolutely.
There's been a tendency to fracture the consciousness through MK Ultra and various other mind control operations to fracture the consciousness into, you know, dozens or hundreds or thousands of pieces. So all of those pieces have to be reunited and reintegrated. And just as we are reintegrating into the larger body, like cells inside a body. So it seems that this is a very auspicious time.
It is indeed. Yeah, they do attempt to fracture us. That's what's behind a lot of the programming that is overt and covert. Or, you know, you got to watch what you consume in terms of what you watch and what you read and what you listen to. And yet some of the stuff it comes through the air and you just acknowledge it. And when you find yourself out of sync with yourself, you know, meditate, do yoga, tantra, some kind of spiritual practice, not religion necessarily, but actually religion's kind of more like programming, but some kind of spiritual
right.
connection to get outside of your skin encapsulated self-sense and connect with your eternal being, your essence that is always connected to source, and just find that within yourself. Get back into nature, eat healthy foods, detox, stay away from things like drugs and alcohol, which put you into these programming situations, and stop allowing yourself to be programmed.
Yeah, you know, if I may say that this, you know, when Marduk was uniting with all the earthlings, that's us, our ancestors, he married Sarpanit, and 200 of his men took 200 earthling brides, and basically he built a launch tower in Babil, which became Babylon at the Persian Gulf, and the commander had his son bomb this thing. That was a Tower of Babel thing. It was really a launch tower. And so, there's almost a million, hundreds of thousands of earthlings. There's only 900 of us. Don't let them speak the same language. Keep them divided. Mm. But that's the whole thing. To the degree that the nations are divided, so we are divided within us. And so what we got to do is, when you look at, say some horrible violence like some of the Middle Eastern types, you got to say, is there a part of me that is suppressed, that has angry feelings that have been pent up enough to erupt into violence? And if so, then what does that part really need? And that allows you to reach out to the violent nations and tendencies and see if you can reach an empathetic understanding. And that has actually been done. The Munich murderers in the Olympic Games, who got married later and had jobs, they weren't terrorists anymore. And that's the answer, you know, just ordinary, loving relationships that people can have with each other. And you start with your own life. There's no other out there. They're just people. If we can just get to the level of what their needs and address one another's needs in a synergistic way. And it's not just the Anunnaki. We have lots of other extraterrestrials like Valiant Thor and his fleet that are here to assist. We have continuously been visited throughout our history, not just by the Anunnaki, who happen to be our particular creators, but by many different types of extraterrestrials.
Well, they go back millions of years, right? I mean, not
That's
just...
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the Anunnaki are relatively speaking, in terms of the overall scope of time, are the new kids on the block.
Right.
Yes.
Maybe coming here
a sense,
long
and then
we've been here.
And then we're just like, you know, we've been here a blink, a second or two. And so I think we're about to experience a return of our consciousness, a full consciousness, and a realignment of our DNA, and that we are going to be restored. Those things that have been clipped and snipped and shut down intentionally to keep us from having abilities that match or go further than our local creators, the larger creator or source is going to make sure that we reach our destiny, and that is in the stars as well.
Right on. But, you know, a process like neurobiotaxis, where the axons and dendrites of your brain cells can move toward each other. Well, so too, when the time is right and the stimulus is right, just like when the caterpillars decide to spin, you know, that's
right.
When our makers intended for our consciousness to expand to a spiritual dimension. More and more people now are being able to access multi-dimensions, to actually stop pretending they don't see ghosts or that they haven't had past lives. And the whole realm of what was called paranormal that we shouldn't look at, and as well as extraterrestrial, and the terrible things that our clandestine government is doing to people, has to be examined. It's time that we grow up. And the big thing to know is, even though we're the new kids on the block, we are capable of learning anything if it's given to us in an intelligent way.
Yes, absolutely.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, Lloyd Pye. I remember you, Lloyd, and Lloyd Pye and Dr. Lesson had this incredible conversation, which I totally aligned with. But I was just in awe that they were having this discussion shortly before Lloyd passed, and they were talking about how there's been intervention all along here on the planet, and the planet, you know, we're not exactly sure how old it is, but it's billions of years old. And Michael Cremo has been reporting how, under the different very deep levels, going back millions, if not billions of years, they're finding these large humanoid forms. And there's been intervention and punctuated periods where higher and higher levels of life forms have been introduced onto this Earth. It was purposely terraformed and created for this process of the evolution of a higher sentient life force species that would house souls that could reincarnate. So this was intentional, and it's a project. It's called the Gaia Project. In one book, I forget the guy's name. Hui or something was the last name. Korean fellow talked about the Gaia Project, and this was a project where souls from all over the multiverses came for this grand experiment in consciousness to create a virus that would spread out to the universe, which would help accelerate consciousness universally. Mm-hmm. So we see that evident here on this planet, and this is a very special planet, and we are front row center seat for the grandest show in the universe that has ever been.
You know, if I may, I'd like to really talk about some of the different factions. And one of the most important things that there was this after World War II was ostensibly over, and there was the bombing of Berlin. The Nazi high brass escaped from Tierra del Fuego at the bottom of Argentina. They had this huge base under Antarctica. It was called New Schwabenland, New Berlin, and they imported something like 2,200 SS troops and almost 200,000 beautiful Ukrainian young women, and they were starting a whole society. They were in league with some Tibetans and a society in Japan that were basically being run by a major reptilian deep underneath Antarctica. But in any case, the Brits found this base, and they tried bombing the entrance, and that didn't work, so that the U.S. Command sent Admiral Byrd with an airplane tender called the Pine Island, and with many seaplanes and Marines and everything, and a three-pronged invasion, and they were going for it. And just as they converged on the tunnel entrance, out flew these great big anti-grav craft. The Germans have been secretly developing them, and sunk the Pine Island, killed 64 Marines. They knocked one of two of the seaplanes out the sky, but these guys were rescued. Byrd beat it home. He was talking about we should drop the atomic bomb on Antarctica too. That got nixed, and they put him away. But in any case, the Joint Chiefs said, we can't fight. We have nothing else to take these craft and the way they move out. But what happened, fortunately, is that a series of ships had come. They were spying on a nuclear facility plant. And first they crashed. They were, and our guys treated the survivor really good. He was just not a very smart mechanic. Our scientists figured out how to communicate with the home planet. They sent a delegation. There was an exchange program that was arranged where 12 Americans went to Serpo, and they sent us an ambassador who showed us how to make the anti-grav craft, and we made some phony ones like the B-2 bomber that didn't work, but we had a real stealth bomber, which is based on the stuff. The Nazis did not attack us from their base because we have the same kind of craft, too, and we've had it for some time, and I'm getting ahead of myself. But anyway, the guys from Serpo, the 12 Americans were there. Two of them decided to live up in this place and, hey, this is like Montana. We're going to stay here. Four of them came home. Some died en route. And the ambassador showed us all kinds of stuff, and the people from Serpo on our side. On the other hand, there's other aliens like some of the Greys from the Zeta Reticular group that have this under Dulce, New Mexico. They had a intergalactic brothel with all these kidnapped victims that they were taking, that Truman had said it's okay.
Wow. Well, I know there's a lot going on in Antarctica, and they're keeping it secret. But, you know, the Nazis are still doing all kinds of things, and they have all kinds of bases around the planet. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. They even have a base in the United States because we have something called Operation Paperclip, which our defense intelligence, whatever it was called in those days, arranged. So all the top Nazi scientists and torture experts came over, and they were debriefed, and they had to say everything they knew. And they were given the choice of, like, Wernher von Braun and those guys, and they were given the choice of they could work for the CIA, or they could work for the Montauk project, which was to how to split minds and make super soldiers and send people back through time to alter time and all kinds of stuff like that. And they got into all the so they run the military industrial complex in the United States right now. The Nazis' influence is here on it's what the
right
hand don't see.
Right.
And of course, the Bush family is all involved in that, and that ties into the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds.
That's right. These are the planetary oligarchy that has huge drug rings. Half the wars that we fought are to protect their poppy interests in Southeast Asia and Afghanistan. Fighting these wars, they use the heroin to destabilize the poor people of the world and to make a profit, and to destabilize countries that are involved in the trade. They control the call centers, and they have everybody's information. They keep all the judges voting for what they want. And this is a terrible tentacle. I'm sure you know all about all this, please.
Well, and also the royals are involved with that, because they've been involved with the poppy fields for going back hundreds and maybe thousands of years. And then what about the Vatican?
Oh, you know, they're right in the heart of the most terrible, heinous, child sacrificing things, and so the royals, where they have to go through this stuff in order to prove that they're on the team, and once they participated in this murder of children, that's what I heard, the Pope had to do this in order to become Pope. Don't know if it's true or not, but it seems to have a lot of credence from some of the people that we've been interviewing. And yet this current Pope keeps saying wonderful things, and so that gives me hope. Just like our President Carter, Pharaoh's heart can melt because they're human beings too, and there isn't any other. And that's the way to get through. If we can just, you know, when Carter and Sadat and Begin were at Camp David, they were about to give up because they had got to know each other as grandfathers and started worrying about what kind of world are we going to have. Sadat said, you know, they'll probably kill me for this back home, but I'm going to sign for peace. And to this day, we have peace between Israel and Egypt. So we can do it. We can do it. We can feel the hearts of the Illuminati and come on over, boys. You can get nice on this side.
Well, yeah. I agree.
I agree, too, but... We'll see how that falls out. I'm sure that there are going to be some holdouts in that process. You know,
yeah, we know if wishes were horses, beggars would ride. So,
on some level, what they fear is what they want. You know, we all come from source. We all come from the garden into it. We shall return. We all come from source, and there's a part of them, even the Illuminati, that want to get set it right, and they may not be conscious and aware of it, but that is, it's kind of like we're all salmon out to sea, right? We eventually will return home to source, and there's that inside each being, however they are incarnated in whatever dimension, there is that the light too is in there. And so I agree with what you're saying, Sash, is that somehow we awaken that light within ourselves, and we will reach this 100th monkey critical mass point, and it probably will filter over into them as well. It will be so infectious that they won't be able to help themselves, because it will be the major dominant operating system of the entire planet.
Yeah, well, you know what? Basically, the extraterrestrials that are concerned with Earth, they meet every 10 years, one of us, they want us to stop nukes in space and stop nuclear armament and to have a unified government with no war. That's what they want. It's very clear, and they have these meetings regularly. That is what they're trying. They are very, very upset about our use of nukes, and we have, we have these satellites that are nuclear armed in space, and they don't want to have it. Sort of ruins the wormholes that they use to travel through space and destabilizes things. They want us to be peaceful, and so that's what the Illuminati wants too. They don't want an environment that's ruined because we are all radiated to death. That's what the Nibirans almost killed themselves out with their stupid nuclear wars, and we're doing this. You can just see where it's going. They're saying, well, we have a chance. Maybe our children, those earthlings, won't ruin their planet the way we ruined ours.
Just tonight I found an article that said that there was a mushroom cloud imaged by India's Mars orbiter, which confirmed a huge explosion on Mars last year. And it appears to be a mushroom cloud. So, there are... somebody is exploding atomic weapons all over the place. And then didn't we drop something on the moon recently? And, the Earth can only take so much atomic waste, and we can only take so much atomic waste. We have to absolutely stop, as of yesterday, the building of nuclear plants and anything that involves nuclear power, and stop using, the radiation that's been reprocessed in the bullets. They put them in the weaponry. You know, this ridiculous thing about wars and weapons and taking over places has got to stop. That mentality has taken over, and we need to rise up and say, no, we will not tolerate this.
It's one ecosystem, and the effect of this nuclear pollution from the Fukushima's and the depleted uranium and all these testing explosions is cumulative. It doesn't go away. So we are shitting in our own water. We're polluting, and so then that makes me wonder, who is trying to terraform this? Because maybe their natural environment is something more nuclear based, toxic to humans.
Well, what have you guys found from all of your interviews on the shows? I mean, what species is trying to do that? Or is it an alliance of negative, rebellious ETs? Or what? Obviously, the people, the elite, are in on it. To a large extent, the Illuminati and the Royals and the rest of them are all in on it. So that points back to the Anunnaki.
It all points back to our parents, the Anunnaki. And so were they reptilian? Are there archons? What are they? Who are these people? Akhenaten with the cone heads. Karen Hudes says that there is another species. The cone heads, the Homo capensis, and she thinks that they are there in the Vatican and ruling, and that's how they have those hats that they wear, the Pope wears,
yes,
with the little, you know, covering up their cone head.
Yep.
And so we have a lot of questions. We don't have the answers. We can speculate. Nobody's coming up over here and sitting down to tea with me and giving me the answers, but, you know, at least the questions are being asked.
Well, yeah, at least people are starting to think about these things, and by us people that are on the cutting edge of this exploration in consciousness, like yourselves and many others, are talking about it, then it allows people, it gives them permission to consider these realities, which are very true. And then if you go through those layers, there are realities beyond that. So the sooner we can digest the bizarre information, the sooner we can get to the good stuff.
Agreed. Tosh, your turn.
What you're saying, you know, we've been on Mars for a long time. When the Anunnaki came here, they established a transshipment base on Mars, and they actually had banished one of their kings to die on Mars, Lalu. So they made Sindonia, the statue there, is of Lalu with his eagle's mask pushed back. And there was, there was a huge, twice the astronauts on the Mars base invaded Mesopotamia. They wound up settling by Jericho, having captured beautiful Earthling wives and breeding and so forth. So that Mars has been continually, and it got ruined when the flood came, and they rebuilt back and so forth. One of our earlier probes was actually, we saw a missile tracking it and then shooting it down. There's been a number of things. Andy Bishago and Barry Satoro have been on Mars in the room program. It's the evidence is absolutely overwhelming. If anyone wouldn't say, oh, that's impossible, there's no such thing as, but there is such a thing. We've had this jump room program. I've seen films that Bob Dean brought back from the astronaut processing stuff in Japan before it got to NASA, lighting off where there's huge mining operations right on the moon. You can just see it. It's the evidence is overwhelming, and some of the best stuff has come from the release from the Defense Information Agency that Kennedy started, where he wanted us to have disclosure. And of course, the people that don't want us to know about what's happening in space don't want the disclosure thing to come down, because then we'll know for sure that 9-1-1 Twin Towers was done by our so-called leaders, and the war in Iraq was contrived, and that Pearl Harbor was a setup, and so was the Boston Marathon. And a lot of people, even if you're giving truth and reconciliation, are going to want to kill these awful monsters who murdered so many.
Mm. Now, what about all the moons? Because everybody that I know that I've talked to that seems to have any insight into what's going on says that all of the moons are hollow and that they're all bases.
I know that there's bases. There have been reports of bases in Saturn's moons for sure. What's interesting about the moon is how the reverberation of your sound,
right.
But there's enough crust for us to have these gigantic conveyor belts that go down layer down a strip mine the size of a canyon to trucks that were on top. That's what Bob Dean showed us at some of the conferences.
Right. So the moon is hollow, probably. There's evidence, but we have to look at everything. We can't say conclusively that that's absolutely what's going on, but we're looking at, what's coming out to us from different whistleblowers, and, there's a lot of disinformation and information, and there are some correlations. There's a large spaceship that appears to be attacked and the inhabitants were killed, and it's on the far side of the moon on the ridge of a crater, and inside the Apollo 20 astronauts went in there and took some film, and later I found a matching statue of the woman on Mars. So there's this, it was like a it was like an orange-colored person, bright orange-colored skin, and humanoid, and kind of Asian-looking woman. And that could be Nimba or some resemblance to Nimba. I'm not sure, but she has the statue on Mars that they found, which has the same face as the woman in the ship that was killed when it blew up, has horns like Hathor. And that's another emanation of Nimba, is Hathor. And Nimba was on the moon. She created the monument, the face on Mars that Richard Hoagland talks about. And, you know, we have the different variations where we think they may have blown it up, or may have just altered the photos.
Yeah, that's Mars. The moon was a place where Nannar, also known as Sin, he was probably Allah, hung out. At one point, he was mad at Marduk taking over after the nuking of Sodom and Gomorrah and Sinai. And so Nannar, he's the son of the commander, Enlil. And he went to Mars and hung out, and his high priestess in Turkey found a comm device on his tunic and got him to come back and take charge of Earth. And that's how come Sin, as the moon god, came back to the Arabian Peninsula. Sin, like in Sinai, it's named after him, and he's the one that invented, from his capital in Ur, using debt. He said, you don't have to have wars all the time. Try getting people in debt.
just out of curiosity, what was the real reason that Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed? Was that a battle between some of the...
Yes. I'm so glad you asked. What happened is Marduk was this prince from Nibiru, who had been promised that he was going to be the next king when this one king wasn't king anymore, and he got cheated out of it. So he was trying to take over. He allied with the Earthlings and the astronauts from that were on Mars base, and he was trying to take over and get the Earthlings in ultimate. And so he was closing in on the spaceport that the commander had on the Sinai, and his son Nabu was going around to the city Sodom and Gomorrah and another city that were right at the south end of what was then the Salt Sea. And so the commander sent Abraham and Lot, his spies, to Sodom and Gomorrah, and they said, yeah, it's gone over to the other side, to Marduk and to Nabu. And so Enlil says, well, he sent his son, you guys get out of here, go to the Negev. He had a council meeting. He asked Nibiru, shall we go ahead? And even the king said, yeah, you got to stop Marduk. He's going to come back on us too. So they got the nukes that they had, and they bombed Sodom and Gomorrah. They broke the bottom of the Salt Sea, which became the Dead Sea, and Sinai is just tephra. It's just this black glass stuff, like, Lot's wife turned back. She didn't turn to salt. She turned to vapor, just like the poor old ladies in Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Mm-hmm. From the two nuclear explosions, one series over Sinai and then a series over the cities of Canaan, blew over Iraq and Kuwait and that whole area where Sumer was, and killed everybody there except the Anunnaki. Most of them got off in their ships. They realized what was coming down. Marduk in Iraq was in Babylon, was far enough north that the nuclear fallout didn't ruin his city, so he was able to survive. Only one of the Anunnaki, of these people from the sky, Bao, she was a princess daughter of the king of Nibiru, stayed and died with her Earthlings, but everybody who didn't get out of there died. And so that's when the commander said, oh, well, give it to Marduk. It's radioactive. It's junk. However, Enki stayed and was able to take the radiation out. Actually, Kishi, this Persian fellow, has got a way to that he can. If you just look at his YouTubes. He shows you how to clean up at least the ground, and he's got there is technologies that could definitely turn the whole nuclear thing around. But if we don't do it, we're all going to die.
We're all going to die.
Well, then, is that something similar to happen with the asteroid belt?
Go ahead, honey. Explain the asteroid belt.
Okay, well, the way this was, the way the Sumerians wrote that the gods told them is that there's two planets, there's two stars, and they're binary, our sun, Solaris, and Nemesis. And this one planetary group that goes around Nemesis is Nibiru and its various little moons and stuff. And they came through the inner solar system between Jupiter and Mars and crashed into this proto-Earth. It was called Tiamat and knocked crumbs of it up there. That's the asteroid belt and the big blob of it right between Jupiter, between Mars and Venus. That became Earth. And so if that's true, then when we get to the asteroids, we'd probably find out that that the asteroids are made of the same stuff as Earth and they have water on them and stuff. Of course, scientists only very recently found that that's true. And lo and behold, and so it's full of stuff like that. So we know that every 3,600 years, the Nibiru said, we come through the inner solar system, and some of the time when the angle is right and our closeness is when your Earth is in the wrong position for you, it causes our mutual gravities to affect each other and causes things like Noah's flood, when the Antarctic ice slipped into the South Sea and caused these huge waves to come up through the Persian Gulf. And that brings me back to what happened to Noah, that the Anunnaki came through for us before, and they promised to do it again.
Well, you know, we're almost out of time. We've got about a minute left, and I imagine that the listeners are just, you know, they're ready for, you know, popcorn, and here's some more stories. Unfortunately, we can't do a second hour tonight, but I would love to have you both back, and when we can have time to just sit down and relax and have another fireside chat, maybe do a couple hours.
Yeah, I'd like to tell you all about Joseph and Moses and those guys.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Brian and Noah and all the different stories.
Oh, yes, that would be wonderful.
We go behind the biblical stories and we tie them back to the Anunnaki. And then you get a big aha going, wow.
It makes so much more sense. And if there's anything you'd like to announce in the last 15, 20 seconds about, you know, a particular website or book that's coming out, this is the time to do it.
Well, the website I'd like to direct you to is enkispeaks.com, enkispeaks.com. And Sash, want to tell them real quickly about the book that's coming up.
It's called Anunnaki, False Gods and Their Spawn. And believe me, we are going to do better than they have done.
Yeah, wonderful.
Yes,
well, I'm going to want to read it myself, so I highly recommend it, and I just want to thank you both for being on tonight and sharing all this wealth of information and wisdom with us. So thank you.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Yes,
all
thank
right.
you so much for having us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Good night, everybody.